I wasn't paying attention to it. I'm not on Twitter. I barely use Instagram, so I'm not swiping. I'm not a typical athlete nowadays.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com. And you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_bball. You should also go and follow the Basketball Monster Twitter account at BaskMonster. And of course, the Locked On NBA Twitter account, which is Locked On NBA Net. So you can find out when the newest episode of your favorite team's podcast is available. What we're going to do today is we're going to look at the four games from Thursday. We're going to preview a big 10 game Friday in the NBA. And we're also going to shine that player spotlight on the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince. So, Michael Bolton,
let's get to it.
All right, that is a real good idea. The monstrous line of the night goes to Kevin Durant of the Golden State Warriors. 28, 10, and 11. A triple-double for Durant. Second consecutive game with double-digit assists. Six triples, two steals, three blocks, 53% from the field on 10 of 19 shooting, and hit both of his free throws. It's one of those games where he is a positive in every single category, a total eight category line, and just shows just how good that this guy can actually be as a fantasy player. He has been obviously superb this season. We've seen that from him, yeah, pretty much the entirety of the year. He is the second ranked player over the course of the season after being the third ranked guy last year. Just consistency continuing for Durant. He's upped his threes. He's upped his assists to 5.7 per game. And over the last month, Durant is averaging 7 assists per game, which is a crazy, crazy amount. Plus, he is averaging over 2 blocks on the season with a true shooting of 63%, which is actually down from last season. So probably some efficiency that can actually rise. He has been ridiculous. He's a guy that you could have gotten. Definitely didn't have to pick him at pick 2, maybe pick 4, maybe pick 6. I've saw him slide in many drafts, and he is just the model of consistency. Look, his last 5 seasons ranks, including this one, so 2 this year, 3 last year, then 2, 6, and 1, and that 6 was the year that he had that broken foot twice, so wasn't quite himself in those 27 games that he played. Absolutely ridiculous fantasy player, and ridiculous on-court player, of course. The waiver wire line of the night is Mason Plumlee of the Denver Nuggets. 14, 6, and 4 for Mace with a steal and a block. A perfect 6 of 6 from the field. And amazingly, he hit both of his free throws. He has not been great this year. He was the 104th ranked player last year, mainly due to his time in Portland, playing 27 minutes per game. But this year, he is outside the top 200 in only 21 minutes per game, averaging 7.5 and 6. A large part of that is because he is shooting 42% on his free throws and doing it on significant volume. He gets you a block a game. He gets you 2 assists per game, which is also well down on where he was last season. Yes, he has been starting next to Nikola Jokic on and off. I still think it's a stupid decision from Michael Malone, but the doctor, he's in control, not me. In that time, over the last month, he is 168th ranked player, and in the last 2 weeks, 135th. Is providing some value, but realistically, the value is coming from two categories. It's coming from blocks, and it's coming from his very, very high field goal percentage. In those last 7 games, he's a 63% shooter on almost 6 attempts per game, which it doesn't seem like much, but it can be a decent sort of amount to help counteract some poor performances you may have from some other guys. I wouldn't be recommending to pick up Mason Plumlee in 12-team leagues or 10-team leagues. To me, he's more a 14 to probably 16-team league guy. But if you are in need of some desperation blocks and field goal percentage, maybe he's that guy, because he's going to be on plenty of waiver wires, as we're well aware. The young gun of the night goes to Buddrick Hield of the Sacramento Kings. Buddrick dropped in 24 points on 10 of 15 shooting. He had 5 rebounds and an assist with 4 triples, 0 steals and 0 blocks. And that's, I guess, one of the things that is sometimes a concern for what Hield can do. His steal numbers have been really, really impressive, though, this season at 0.9 per game. Last year, he was at 0.5. So we're talking about almost a doubling of his steal rate. Never going to get huge block numbers or huge assist numbers. He's the 119th ranked player for the season, but over the last 2 weeks, he's 62nd, and that comes on the back of 51% shooting and not missing a single free throw in that time. So those percentages are really elevating his overall value, not providing much in any of the other categories. Yeah, 14.7 points is nice. His minutes are pretty steady. And I think he's totally fine to own in a 12-team league guy. But if you've been listening to this podcast for the last couple of seasons, you know that I don't think all that much of Bud as a long-term prospect. I think the Kings are pretty much locked into the fact that he is a sixth man, 25-minute per game guy who is a high efficiency scorer off the bench, and that can have value in fantasy. And I think, you know, we see his minutes go up by one or two as the season progresses here, but he's never going to come out there and be dishing huge amounts of assists. The rebounds have been all right, the steals have been nice, but he is a high efficiency 3-point guy at this point. That has value. He probably should be owned in all 12-team leagues. I wouldn't classify him 100% as a must-own guy, but he's pretty close to it. But just understand where his strengths lie and don't expect big changes in his statistical profile. This is just who he is. He is a high-efficiency, 3-point shooting guy who can give you some scoring, who is also displaying a really improved steal rate this season, which all kudos goes to him for doing that and being more active defensively. But he's not going to be a guy that I think is really ever going to challenge for a top 40 position at any point in his career. He could maintain, you know, really nice shooting numbers, and that would be, yeah, it would be great. Over his last three games, he's in fact the 32nd ranked player, averaging 17, 5.5, and 2 with 1.5 steals on 51% shooting. So some really positive numbers, but that comes with 57% 3-point shooting, bumping that number up, therefore bumping his field goal percentage up, bumping the threes, bumping the points per game, which is what has elevated him that high. And that's understandably not going to be something that is sustainable. So Bud is fine to own. Don't overrate him as many people do. I just don't believe in him as this, you know, future 35-minute per game stud guard. Granted, he is only in his second season in the NBA, so he could really transform things next year. But one of the things that players heading from their first two seasons into their third season improve is the efficiency. And Bud doesn't really need a big improvement there. He was at 54 true shooting last year, 56 this season, you know, 62 over the last 2 weeks. The efficiency's there. It's those other areas where I just worry that maybe the limitations of his game will prevent him from being an awesome fantasy option. Man, just can someone please get this guy under 70% owned so I don't have to give him the dud of the night every time. Marcin Gortat, 4 points with 1 rebound and 1 assist, no steals, no blocks, and 2 of 3 from the field. He is outside the top 200 over the last month. He is the 167th ranked player for the season. There is absolutely no excuse or no reasoning or no argument for him being owned in any 10-team league, any 12-team league, and honestly, any 16-team league, or 14-team league, probably a 16-teamer. His minutes have been down, yeah, really significantly. He's been under 20 minutes for 3 of the last 4, and then today's game, he had 21 minutes in those. He can occasionally get you rebounds, but today he had 1. He hasn't blocked a shot in his last 4 games, and only has 2 blocks over his last 8 games. So if you were hoping to get him as a block streamer, it just isn't happening. He is at under 1 block per game this season. We've seen that rate drop pretty significantly this season. And as much as I like Gortat, he's 34 years of age. He isn't getting better. So if for some reason you're still holding on to him, please just move on. Forget it. It's done. No more marching Gortat in 10s, 12s, 14 team leagues. Well, that's the way I see it anyway. Time for question time, and today's question of the day comes from Hank Koshnia, who's on Twitter at Kadeus. And I chose this question because it is Australia Day here, our national day. There is obviously controversy, I guess, over the day, with many people wanting the date to be changed because of the sordid history, I guess, associated with that day. I'm not going to get into that sort of debate here, but what the question that Hank asks is, what's an Aussie recipe most of us here in the States would be unfamiliar with? And this is a question that a few people have asked me about Australian cuisine, and I look at it and I go, well, what the hell is an Australian recipe? I can't think of any food that we eat here that is Australian. Now, there are certain ingredients or certain things that we eat, but no, like, national dish, so to speak. we eat fish and chips. That's not Australian. That's an English thing. Meat pies. Maybe it's a meat pie, as we saw Darren Revell, you know, trying to eat in that video a while ago, and then redeeming himself yesterday at the Sixers game, and they had the meat pie eating contest at halftime. Is it one of those things? I don't think so. I don't think a meat pie is an Australian thing. I guess we've made it our own, but that's it's an English thing with shepherd's pies, and that's where that came from. So I don't think there's any real food or cuisine that is famously Australian. We've got ingredients that are quite Australian. Kangaroo, obviously, which amazingly I've never eaten, so I can't tell you what that tastes like. The two things that I came up with that are things that you can actually make, they're in the sweet realm of things. Lamingtons, which is like a chocolate-coated sponge, sometimes filled with jam, but with desiccated coconut on the outside. It's just Google Lamington, you'll see what that looks like. I prefer mine with jam in it, but it's like a sponge cake with the chocolate on the outside, coconut, and sometimes jam in the middle. Well, the other thing would be Anzac biscuits, which is like a golden syrupy treacle biscuit with, I think, oats mixed in it. Anzac stands for the Australian and New Zealand Army Corps. I don't even know why they're called Anzac biscuits, what they're to do with the army. I guess they were produced during one of the wars. But Anzac biscuits are quite an Australian recipe. But we've got other things that are quite unique to this country. As I said, kangaroo, Granny Smith apples, the green apples, they're an Australian thing. Vegemite, as you're all well aware of. And yes, we do eat Vegemite. Yes, I do eat it. Yes, I do like it. Pretty much everybody in this country does. I know everybody who eats it in other countries absolutely can't stand it, but we are brought up on it, and everybody here does eat that. Moreton Bay bugs or Balmain bugs, a type of seafood, sort of in between a lobster and a prawn, in that middle size, beautiful seafood. Tim Tams, which many of you would have tried before, like a chocolate biscuit, not something you can really make. They're a pre-produced chocolate biscuit. And finger limes, which is a native Australian fruit, which I really only discovered a couple of years ago, but really do enjoy those. They look like long fingers, and inside it's like a citrusy caviar, pretty much, and get pink ones and green. I've actually got some here. I probably should have got some and shown you guys on the video, but I'd say they're probably the most Aussie things that I can think of that is food related. So thank you for that question, Hank, which ties into the day, being our National Day, Australia Day here in Australia, quite clearly. All right, let's get into these games now and break them down. The first one, the Sacramento Kings and the Miami Heat. Both teams debuting their City Edition jerseys. We know the Miami Heat have the best jersey in the NBA with that City Edition Miami Vice jersey, which is sold out everywhere. Can't seem to get one of those. The Kings get the last second victory on, honestly, an extraordinary De'Aaron Fox play. I think it was Hield that took the shot and missed. And then out of nowhere, Fox jumped over the top of Goran Dragic. He elevated that high for the putback dunk. I could not believe how high he was. I felt like his chin was over the rim. He was that high. He was excellent in the last 3 minutes of the game, pressuring defensively, getting steals, and then that game-winning dunk putback dunk that he put in. As for what his overall performance was like, 14-3-4 in 30 minutes for Foxy. Strong game there. The efficiency is a concern for him, and we know that's going to be a concern, but he should be owned in all 12-team leagues. As a real shock to the system, the Kings changed their starting lineup. There is absolutely zero pattern to their starting lineups. There is zero pattern to their resting. George Hill has now rested the last two games in a row. We had Garrett Temple return for this one. We had Zach Randolph back. We had Kostas Koufos back while Vince Carter and George Hill sat out. There is no way to predict who is going to be in and out. And if you're going to be sitting guys like Hill two games in a row, it's almost impossible to own him unless you're holding on for a trade to somewhere else. But again, once we hear details of trades, most of the time that trade just doesn't go through. I always love a situation when you're building for the future and you're getting youth in there. So you start Zach Randolph, you play him 28 minutes, and you play him in front court combinations with Kostas Koufos. You could explain away the rationale of having Zebo out there, teaching the young guys, instructing them where to be, giving them someone to take the defensive focus away from them. But if you're going to play Randolph and Koufos together, it absolutely defeats the purpose of having Randolph on the court at any point. He's not teaching anybody shit by playing playing out there with another veteran while Labissiere and Cauley Stein sit on the bench. And this was like 5 minutes into the first quarter. Cauley Stein got dragged so Kufos could come in. Just absolute bullshit coaching that continues to infuriate. Randolph has got a disgustingly bad on-off for this season. He is not good. And you can point to his numbers and go, man, he had a double-double. I don't care. He has not been good. He was not good last year. And he is an active detriment to the success of this team, despite the fact that they won. Bogdan had 11-3-3, a strong performance. He's a must-own, while Cauley Stein had 9-4-3, but added the two steals and the two blocks. And of course, we know he is a must-own guy. Labissiere, only the 18 minutes, went scoreless, had three rebounds, and was grabbing at his sore shoulder later in the game. So it's something for us to monitor. He is an okay 12-team league guy. He's behind Bogdan, he is behind Budrick, he's behind Foxy, and he's behind Cauley Stein in terms of priority adds out of those guys. He's clearly the fifth option there in terms of your potential standard league contributors. And it also feels like he's going to be dicked around the most out of all of their young guys in terms of playing time and role. Onto the Heat, Goran Dragic returned 23-3 in 31 minutes with a steal. So good to see him back in business while Tyler Johnson was out again. So that meant Derek Jones Jr. started. And again, just really living up to that moniker of worst fantasy player in the NBA. 0 points in 15 minutes in a start for Jonesy. He will not be in the rotation when Tyler Johnson is back. In fact, he's only got 9 NBA days left on his two-way deal. Joshie Richardson, piss-poor night in terms of shooting. 6 points on 13 shots, but 7 boards, 5 assists, and 3 steals. Redeemed it a little bit, while Justice Winslow played a lot of point guard with Tyler Johnson out. 11-5-2. A decent game there for Winslow, but not really coming close to sniffing 12-team league value. Maybe not even 14. Jimmy Johnson definitely didn't make us proud. 4-8-4 in his 29. It's still not horrendous, but his numbers have dipped quite a bit recently. And I'm not thinking that he is an absolute lock must-own guy. I would still hold him, but the numbers have tumbled. Hassan Whiteside, 27 minutes, 8-13 with a steal and a block, while the Duke Wayne Ellington dropped in 6 triples for 20 points in 34. Ellington should be owned. And Whiteside, again, the minutes, he was quite limited in his revenge game against the Sacramento Kings. Bam had 6 points and Olynyk had 10, 4-4 with a pair of blocks in his playing time. And those two guys are going to cannibalize each other in terms of any of them having any chance of having value in your standard formats. Wizards got smacked by the Thunder. Bradles-Beal had 41-12-7 with 6 triples and 2 steals, but played a whopping 46 minutes, which is never going to be good for any player to play 46 out of 48 minutes in a game. He was excellent, though, super efficient. The free throws, again, they've been a little bit down from him lately, only 71% here, but that's brilliant from the field goal spot with 58%. Johnny Wall had 21 with 12 assists and 5 triples, and we had a Markieff Morris sighting. 38 minutes for Morris, 20 points, 9 boards, 2 steals, and a block, and that's fantastic. The problem is we have absolutely no ability to rely on that or to expect that to continue along that level. He is more a 14 team league guy, and that's about it. Otto Porter's struggles continued, 11-6-2, 3 steals and 2 triples. I don't believe in him anywhere near as much as pretty much any other fantasy person in the world. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure how Matt and Kyle feel about him. But a lot of people really pump up Otto Porter. I am not about him as much as any others. I'm not looking at him as a buy low top 20 guy. I think that he could continue to struggle and could finish this year outside the top 50, or at least from here on out, maybe be a top 70 sort of player, as that hip is still clearly bothering him. Oubre only the 25 minutes with Markieff playing more, 9-3 and a steal for Cali. I still think that he is a fine sort of short-term hold in 12-team leagues. Onto the Thunder, Westbrook had 46-6-6 with 2 steals on 66% shooting, almost beat his free throw percentage. He was at 70 from the line. That's not going away. While Paulie George had 18-2-4 with 4 steals, and Mallow had 13-8, and Adams had 12-10 with 3 steals. That's it, really, and then not much else happens for the rest of this team, but Terry Ferguson, an interesting performance from him. He played 25 minutes, and he closed the game over Andre Robertson. This is something I spoke about, I don't know, maybe 2-3 weeks ago, with the way that Ferguson had played with Robertson out. I said there will be situations, I think, that they will use him in their closing lineup when they don't want to be dealing with a Robertson hack situation, or they don't want to, or they're in a situation where they need offense and not defense. And that's exactly what we saw here. Billy Donovan said after the game he didn't want to be having Robertson get out there and shoot free throws, so they closed with Fergo. I think he's going to be an interesting type player and a starter at some point in the NBA in the next 3 years. He can hit some threes at times, but he does have a lot of work to do in other areas of his game to really be considered an elite fantasy asset, which he's clearly not at that level just yet. The next game we take a look at, the Knicks and the Denver Nuggets. Tim Hardaway Jr. was out of this game to rest. It's the first half of a back-to-back, and he played 35 minutes on Tuesday, so they decided to hold him out. With him out, they had Rugged Ronnie Baker starting, because why not? 12 minutes for Rugged Ronnie, 0 points with 2 rebounds, but the guy who benefited the most was Trey Burke. 29 minutes for Trey Burke, 18 points, 2 rebounds, and 11 assists. And people really, really like Trey Burke, I found out today. Man, he's good. They've got to give him a shot. I don't think he's good at all. This was a good performance. We have seen enough of Trey Burke. He was disgustingly bad last year for Washington. He was piss poor in Utah the majority of his time there. But the fact that he came into this game before Frank Ntilikina is just a disgraceful coaching performance. You're going to use 3 point guards, it's bad enough. But if you're going to start Jarrett Jack at the age of 78, and then you're going to bring in Trey Burke as your backup and limit Ntilikina, it's poor coaching. Now, in fairness, they did run a lot of 2 point guard lineups with Ntilikina still getting his regular 19 minutes, and he wasn't great. He had 3-1-3 with a 3-1-1 and couldn't hit his shots. But the idea behind, you know, getting Burke in there as that first point guard off the bench is a baffling one to me. A lot of people will be looking to go and add Trey Burke based on this. I wouldn't. I think that the fact that he got these extra minutes is more to do with the fact that Timmy Hardaway was out, not that he is going to be taking over and playing 30 minutes a night and completely eliminating Jarrett Jack from the rotation. I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah, maybe he finds himself with an every night rotation spot, but remember, in the 2 games prior to this, he had combined for about 9 minutes total. So it's not like he's got a good history of doing this. He hasn't have a good history of being a good player throughout the NBA at all. And this shooting performance, this efficiency, is not something that you ever associate with Trey Burke. Good numbers, 16-team league, sure, I'd add him, but I wouldn't be considering him a 12-teamer. Porzingis was back here, 21-7.
Porzingis.
27 minutes for him in a pretty significant loss, while Beasley had 21-4 in 29 minutes with 2 steals, and you can attribute that, well, I will attribute that, to the fact that Timmy Hardaway was out. Extra minutes and extra usage for Mick there. 20-7 for Cantor in 27 minutes, because Kyler Quinn was out, as was Joakim Noah, who has left the team for personal reasons and is unlikely to be back for the next couple of games. He was apparently unhappy with his playing time in the game against the Warriors. Not sure why it took him 50 games to complain about his playing time. And there is 100% something more to it than just personal reasons. I can assure you of that. There is way more to it. And that's all I will say on that matter. Bill Hernangómez played the backup role, 15 minutes, 9-2. I think these last 2 games should give you that idea that if you're looking to grab Hernangómez, or if you're looking to stash him, if you have been stashing him, it's going to require 2 moves for him to become a fantasy standard league guy. It's going to require a Kyler Quinn trade, and it's going to require an Enes Kanter trade or an Enes Kanter benching. And I'm not certain that happens because, as I've said all the time, Kanter is just a significantly better version of Hernangómez, and he's not that much older. I could always be wrong. We'll see. Denver, Gaz Harris. Came in with a sore foot, only played the 31 minutes, but had 23-3 with 4 triples and a steal, and he was efficient as usual. Nikola Jokic had 18-7-10, and Trey Lyles got really hot, 21 points on only 12 shots, but I guess the thing that worries us there is the fact that he played only 22 minutes and off the bench behind Mason Plumlee. So Lyles was having this consistent run of 28 to 29 minutes, which was really useful in fantasy, but if he's going to play 21 minutes, then it's really tough to consider him a must-own guy. The Blue Arrow had 18-5-5, while Farden Will Barton, who will continue to start at small forward, had 10-4-7. The fact that he starts at small forward now probably means that Manny Moutier is going to be in the rotation most nights. He had 5 points with 6 assists, but that's really just a 20-team league sort of a spot. While Babyneck dropped in 16 points, didn't do much else there. Wilson Chandler, and you're looking at him only in the deeper formats. The last game of the night, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Golden State Warriors. No Jim Butler again, so Nemanja Bjelica started. He played 37 minutes and had 11-6-3 with 2 steals and 3 triples. And that's solid. He's been good. But the likelihood is that Butler is back for the next game, pushing Bjelica back to a 17-16 minute a night role. Jeff Teague, 17-3-7. Efficient shooting. But I think the biggest thing that stands out here is that Karl Anthony Towns took 24 shots after this bullshit of him taking 7-8 shots per game in Butler's absence. He took by far the most shots on the team. Wigo had 18 and Jamal Crawford had 16. So good to see Towns being more aggressive, dropping a 31-11-5. Crawford had 21 points with 5 assists. I was just on the Locked On Wolves podcast today. We were talking about Crawford. And Colton was saying, is there a chance that you could just hold Crawford on your roster and hope for these explosive games? Of course, he comes out and does this after I said, no way, I don't want him to do anything to do with this guy as the 250th ranked player who's averaging like under 1-3 per game. He comes out and drops 21 in 26 minutes. In large part, that is to do with Butler's absence, him getting more playing time, and you shouldn't be looking at Jamal Crawford in anything outside of deeper leagues. 10-4-3 for Wigo, really standard line apart from the two steals and blocks, but a piss-poor night in terms of efficiency. On to the Warriors, Steph had 25-5-9 with 3 steals, Thompson had 25-5 with 7 triples, and Draymond had 9-8 with a steal and 3 blocks. So basically, just the same shit that happens every single game for this team. There's really nothing to talk about. Nobody's changing in value, there's no rotation spots coming up, there's no changes in things, there's no movement. Everything is as consistent as it comes, with the exception of what they do with the backup big man minutes. But for now, with Jordan Bell out, it's Kevon Looney, it's Dave West, and Zaza Pachulia starts, and that's it. And this team is just as consistent as they come, and that gives us pretty much no ability to do anything with it fantasy-wise. No up-and-coming guys to grab or anything along those lines. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. Then we're going to come back, shine the player spotlight on Taurean Prince of the Atlanta Hawks, and preview a big, big 10-game slate for DFS for Friday. Today's song comes from Jake McKelvey and the Countertops. I don't have the name of the song here, so I'm just going to play it, and we'll see how it goes. I'll be back to talk DFS and Taurean Prince in a minute or so.
At 2 a.m. after 2 hours I sign up, and no one has come scrape the dead porcupine off the road by your house, where you just kicked me out, 'cause I flat out can't kiss you with food in my mouth. I flipped my lid for the dead pilot starter, had breadsticks for breakfast, so now I have heartburn. I figured I'd find her, 'cause nothing's much finer than you and your apron and me and my sideburns.
All right, guys, we're back. Let's go to the player spotlight. And as I said, we're going to be looking at Taurean Prince of the Atlanta Hawks, a guy whose name is in everyone's mouths at the moment in terms of what's happening for him in fantasy. So I thought it would be a good idea to just speak about what I think about him as a player, his prospects for the rest of this season, and moving forward. Let's start off by saying what he's actually done this season. He's the 94th ranked player. So you can tell me, you can tweet at me that he's trash, you can comment that he's trash. He's still a top 100 player, averaging 12.2 points, 5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.7 steals, 1.7 threes, a steal, 0.6 blocks, 43, 79, and 40% from three. Basically, he is a perfect low-end roto guy because he's not standing out in any one category. He's providing basically average value in nearly every area with the exception of field goal percentage, where he's a little bit under, but basically just a solid roto guy, mid to late round player who provides average numbers right across the board, which is exactly what you want in that category. He has upped his minutes from 17 per game last year to 30 per game this year. Now, I understand the criticisms. The last month he has been poor. He's only at 10.8 points. His rebounds, his assists, his steals have dropped. His field goal percentage has dropped even further. His three-point percentage has dropped in that time. And the numbers haven't been good. And we can look at his last couple of games. You know, points totals in his last 7 games. 1-2, 7-7, 17-2 is piss poor. But points isn't the only category in fantasy. In his last 3 games, he's tallied 5 steals. He's had 4 assists in those 3 games and knocked in 3 triples, so he's still doing little bits and pieces. In that last game, yeah, it was bad. 13 minutes, and Mike Budenholzer said, yeah, I took him out because he made some mistakes and he needed to learn from that. That doesn't mean that he is playing 13 minutes a night. It doesn't mean he's going to be benched at any point moving forward. And I think that his minutes will come back up. And this is a slump. He is struggling. I think the finger is bothering him a little bit, despite the fact that when he returned from that injury, he put up 2 really big games, a 20 and a 16 pointer. The usage is down. His confidence is down recently, but I do think that he bounces back. But in saying all this, I don't think that he's a very good real life player. And I don't think that he is a... I don't think he's got starter upside on a top 20 team in the NBA, not even a playoff team. I don't think he is that good. He is an older second year guy. He's already 23 in his second season, but you know, often we'll see these older guys, even in their third and fourth year, and you know, quite commonly in their third year, really pick it up and start to improve. One thing I think we could see him work on, the steal numbers have dipped a little bit recently, but he could be a 1.5 steals guy. He could average a block a game, but I think he could really get the passing going and be a 3.5 to 4 assist a game guy. And that's something that does improve quite significantly as you experience more in the NBA. He's taken his per 36 assists from 1.9 to 2.8, so already an increase there. He's taken his usage up this season, but one of the more important things with that usage is he's taken his true shooting from 51 to 54 with a 2% rise in usage rate, which is always an important thing. And the other thing that's important is that even though he is a second-year player and he was a first-year guy last year, his on-off was positive in both those seasons. It wasn't great. It was 0.8 this year and it's 0.4 last year. But still, when you're not sitting at -2, -3 as a young guy, that is impressive. Despite the struggles this year, he's improved his box score plus minus. Still a negative, but we're not talking about a horrendous number, but still a below average there. The PER's poor. Win shares are still well below average. So he's not someone who's looking at this point like he's going to translate ever into a star, but it's really hard to write guys off after 2 years, even though I spent 5 minutes doing that with Bud earlier on in the show. I think he can be solid. I think he's in the right spot to do that. I think he can really improve in certain areas, steals, blocks, and assists, particularly next season or the year after. But I think his ceiling is probably, a best case scenario is probably top 50, best case. But if he can find himself on this rebuilding Hawks team playing 31 or 32 minutes a night for the next 3 seasons, you could easily see him having multiple top 70 seasons in that point. Got a long way to go, got a lot of areas to improve on, but the impressive part of what I've seen from him this year is increasing the usage, but also doing it while increasing the efficiency and doing it while increasing more self-creation, while being able to take the shots that you're creating yourself. Last year, 72% of his shots were assisted. This year, we're at 62%, so an improvement there. But the more stunning thing is he's only at 44% assisted at the rim, which is at the 89th percentile for his position. That's down 21% from last year. So getting himself to the rim way more easily than what we saw last year. He's taking 97% of his threes in catch and shoot type situations. So that's something he needs to be able to work on, but maybe he just isn't able to do that in terms of taking pull up threes just as a catch and shoot guy. But working in other areas and improving efficiency along with usage and more self creation is a good sign. I still do have my doubts about Prince. While this is a good buy low opportunity, don't buy low thinking that he's going to ever develop into an elite wing player along the lines of a Kawhi Leonard or anyone in that sort of a realm. He is more in that mid-range. He's not even a Paul George type of guy. He's in that mid-range guy who probably on a good team is a Jay Crowder or something from this season. And Crowder's had some good fantasy seasons, but more if he was on the Cavs, he'd be worse than Crowder. That's sort of where he could be on a good team. So I don't have massively high hopes for Taurean Prince, but I do think he should be owned in all leagues this year. So all 12 team leagues at least. And I'm riding out this bump because there's no indication to me, despite this little slump, that it's going to be a prolonged thing. And he could, from now on, he could realistically have top 75 value from here on out. He might not, but it's a realistic proposition. And depending on who else is on your wire, there probably isn't going to be many guys out there that have that ability, even though they might be currently outperforming him. The perfect lineup on FanDuel. Russ Westbrook, 62.2. Trey Burke, 36.9. Bradles Beal, 66.9. And Jamal Crawford, 29.6. Iguodala had 26.5. And Durant had 64.5. Markeith dropped in 36.8. Taj had 30.5. And Karl Anthony Towns had 47.7. On DraftKings, we got Burke at 38.5. Beal at 72.5. Courtney Lee, 33.25. Durant at 70.5. Mason Plumlee with 31. Westbrook, 64. Markeith Morris at 36.75. And Jamal Crawford at 30.75. And that gave you a total of 377.25 for a cost of $49,000. There are 10 games on in the NBA on Friday, so a busy DFS slate. The first one of those games that we are going to look at is the, who is it? It's the Atlanta Hawks and the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets are favored by 6.5, and the total is 210 points at point guard. Schroeder's at 7,300. I like it for cash, and I like it for tournaments. He feels as rock solid as they come, with almost like a 32-point floor and probably 40-point upside, which I guess takes him a little bit out of tournament calculations, but a strong cash option nonetheless. You can use him, or you can use Kemba Walker at $1,000 more. I know which one I would take. Yeah, Kemba might give me 4 or 5 more points, but I'd rather save that $1,000 and still have a similar upside and a pretty much identical floor. So I would take Schroeder over Kemba Walker, given that price discrepancy. At shooting guard, you've got Nick Batum at $6,000. Amazingly averaging 30 over the last 5 and 31 over the last 3, which is bang on where you want him to be at that $6,000 price point. I'm not sold on using him for cash, even though the matchup is a positive one for him, but you could do a lot worse than getting him in there. Well, Jezalam at 44 is strictly going to be just a tournament guy. Kenty Bazemore's at 5,300. Now, the Hornets are very, very good at limiting production from shooting guards. Batum and Kidd Gilchrist, you know, provide quite good defense there. He has been a little bit underwhelming lately. Kent, more of a tournament guy. He had mainly given the matchup. Kidd Gilchrist is at 49. Taurean Prince, formerly at 4,800. We know that Prince has struggled, as I just highlighted there, but I would be interested in using him in GPP. His ownership is going to be significantly lower, I think. While Kidd Gilchrist has a super positive matchup, small forwards have done really well against the Hawks recently. So he is a guy that can have these weird, inexplicable, you know, 9 of 11 shooting nights where he drops in 20 points and has 4 steals. Like these dumb games, they happen 1 out of every 20, but that's what makes him a GPP type of guy at a sub 5,000 price. For power forwards, Marvin Williams at 4,600. Big minutes, big production in the last game. I think he's okay for cash, but I'm not really keen in tournaments. Kaminsky, Ilyasova, not interested. While the Baptist, John Collins is at 5,700. This guy is still averaging 29 over the last 5, despite some Budenholzer dickery. Had 43 in his last game, and the matchup's not a bad one here. So I'd feel all right about getting him involved and hoping we get that minutes push up to 27. The foul issue could be a problem, and that's why maybe you lean more tournaments. At center, The Undertaker, 4,800. That's a pass for me. Dwight Howard's the one we want to look at, but he is at 9,900. Now, this matchup is almost as good as it gets. Not quite Brooklyn Nets level, but centers against the Hawks have been putting up absolute monsters. We know that this is Dwight's former team. He had 44, or he's averaging 44 in his return bouts against them. 9,900's a lot. I would still look at him as a tournament guy. His lowest score in his last 5 is 46 points, which is a bloody fantastic floor, but only a maximum of 53. I think there are going to be other options out there, but using Dwight is absolutely not a bad decision, I don't think. Just given how well he is playing at the moment, which is, honestly, we can hate Dwight as much as we want, but he has been really, really good. Over on DraftKings, I like Dwight a lot over there. 8,800, that's really, really strong. And Bazemore at 51, I'm more than willing to give him a go on DraftKings despite the negative matchup. Kidd Gilchrist and Formerly both come in as tournament guys, especially Mick. He is at $4,000. Now, that gives him significant scope for upside. He gets a 25.9, you're laughing there. And that's not a crazy, crazy thought for Kidd Gilchrist. Schroeder at 7,300 and Walker at 87. Still taking Schroeder there, but probably just a little bit overpriced given the DraftKings salary cap constraints. Let's move on to the next game. We're going to talk about the Jazz. They're taking on the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors are favored by 7.5, and the total is 207.5 points here. Kyle Lowry's at 7,800. I'd love that for Lowry if it wasn't against Utah. So for now, let's just throw that into a tournament, and that's about it. While DeLon Wright at 43, and last game's hero, Freddie Van Vliet, is now at 4,500. He dropped 50 in that last game. We know that we're not expecting the blocks. We're not expecting that level of efficiency or that level of offense. So he is a guy that, at that level of elevation in price, I don't think we're expecting a repeat performance from Freddles Van Vliet. Shooting guards. Actually, I didn't talk about Ravishing Rick Rubio. He's at 4,900, Rick, averaging 27 over the last five, 27 over the last three. No, sorry, 27 over the last five, 25 over the last three, 31 in his last game. Yeah, Lowry's a negative matchup for him, but at that price, given the way that he's playing, with Rocket Rodney Hood already out, I don't think that Rubio's a bad play here. Even if it's just for cash to get you 25 points, maybe 30 points, it's not bad. We've seen a definite improvement in what he's been doing recently. Now, he could very easily shit the bed, but it's been much improved. The Don, 7,100 for Don Mitchell. He shot terribly in the last game, still had 32 points. So at 7,100, I don't see any reason to think that he is not a cash or a tournament option. Probably not an upper echelon one, but still in the realms of a usable guy. Well, DeMar DeRozan at 84, I'll take the Don over him. I'll save myself $1,300. And on FanDuel, saving that money is really the name of the game the majority of the time. At small four, Jingling Joe's at 48. He gets a reprieve with Rocket out, and he's been good in those last three games, averaging 28 in that time. So at 48, you can have, I guess, a level of confidence in him for cash. There's probably going to be better guys out there, and his tournament upside's not all that high. At power forward, we're looking at Serge Ibaka at 5,700. Hate the matchup. That's a fade. Well, Derek Favors at 57. Strong game from Fave in the last one, but only played 24 minutes. So expecting 39 points in 24 minutes. If you expect that again, I think you're barking up the wrong tree. So I'm not really keen on looking at him. At center, we've got Rudy Gobert, 7,800. The numbers have been coming in all right for him, 35 over the last three, 38 in that last outing, but I'm not ready to spend that money on him. While Jonas Valanciunas at 5,700, could he get Gobert, or could the fact that they're going to go a little bit bigger mean that Dwayne Casey has to use Valanciunas more? I am in no way looking to use JV as a cash option, but give him 26 minutes and he'll smash for that value, no doubt whatsoever. It's just getting to those minutes, which is tough, which does make him a GPP guy. Whereas Jakob Poeltl's at 39, I don't really see too much there for Big Yak. On DraftKings, Lowry at 72. I love that. Despite the negative matchup, I really like it for cash. That's just too cheap to ignore. While the Don at 6,700 is super, super good. DeRozan's at 7,600. I'd almost lean towards using him in cash, but the negativity of the matchup makes me go maybe just for tournaments. While Valanciunas at 48 is still a strong tournament guy. I think Gobert's more in play on DraftKings at 7,000, and Ibaka at 48 is really tantalizing, and I would throw that into a tournament pool just given how cheap he is. And he's clearly got 30 to 35 point upside, and that's not talking about a ridiculously high level of upside. Indiana and Cleveland, the Cavs are favored by 5. The total is 222. Good old Richie Beno.
2 for 222.
The Cavs announced their starting lineup change, and it's the one that gives us the least excitement. Tristan Thompson comes in for Jay Crowder, moving Kevin Love back to the four. Thompson, if any of you are interested in standard fantasy leagues, there's no, absolutely zero interest. And I think I tweeted that out multiple times today. No chance that you want to grab him in 12-team leagues. And of course, Crowder loses significant value now. If injury-wise, Miles Turner questionable, TJ Leaf questionable, and Channing Frye questionable. The only one we really care about there, of course, is Miles. If he is out, it boosts the Deuce Young, and it boosts DeMontis Sabonis quite comfortably. At point guard, Isaiah Thomas is at 6,200. I like the matchup for Isaiah. The price is not bad. The form for him has been piss poor, but absolutely throw him into a tournament. He's not at a restrictive price point there at all. While Dazza Collison at 5,400 has been putting up some strong numbers lately after a little bit of a lull. 28 average over the last five in only 29 minutes. I don't really love the tournament upside, but you're a point guard, you play the Cavs, big numbers just pour in pretty much every time. So 5,400 for Dazza, I like it. I don't think that there's any reason to look at that and go, that's a shit spot, because I do like that matchup a lot. Of course, Corey Joseph at 45 just doesn't have quite the accumulation powers that Dazza does. We don't care about Derrick Rose, obviously. Shooting guard, Vic Oladipo, 9,900. Cavs, it's so appealing, but that is expensive for Vic. So outside of tournaments, I would fade it. You love the matchup, you love the spot, but almost $10,000 on Oladipo, I cannot see that being a value play, and that's tough for me to use. While the plumber J.R. Smith is minimum salary, and honestly, probably too much. Dwayne O'Wade's at 4,300, just too many guys there, while Kyle Korver at minimum, he's just not getting enough minutes to even be a value tournament guy.
LeBron James.
Let's go. 10,900 for LeBron. Angry LeBron, maybe. This has got 60 points written all over it. I am all about LeBron here. Let's load him up and let's go. Well, Bojan Bogdanovic at 4,400. Big game from Bojan in the last one, which means that a real turd is likely on its way. So he is not someone I'm all that keen on. At power forward, we've got Thaddeus at 6,300. Miles Turner out. Thad becomes an interesting cash option, but that'd be the only spot that I look at him. Sabonis at 6,700. Again, more value if Turner's out, but that price, I don't really enjoy it, even though it is a positive matchup for him against the Cavs. I wouldn't feel great about using him in any cash spot, while Crowder at 3,700, not in his new role. At center, Thompson's at 3,600. Now, I said I don't like him for standard fantasy leagues. At that price, I could see him being useful in DFS. He doesn't need to do much to get 3,600. That's almost minimum. So there is some appeal there. Maybe a 23 or 24 pointer could come your way, and that would comfortably repay that value. As for Love at 7,100, we can only use him in tournaments. The usage has been cut significantly, and the team hates him apparently. Miles Turner at 6,600. I'd be interested in tournamenting that if he happens to play. But of course, we don't know that just at this point. On to the DraftKings side of things. Not a huge amount that I love there. Everyone's priced fairly high. You could use Tristan Thompson in that same $3,600 price point. You know, LeBron at $1,100 and Vic Oladipo at $95 are okay. I'd feel much better about using LeBron at that elevated price. Love, Isaiah Thomas, Miles Turner, Sabonis. Nothing there really stands out. Maybe Thaddeus at 5,800. If we have Turner out, he becomes a guy for us to look at. All right, let's move on to the next one. We've got the Nets and the Bucks, the Jason Kidd Bowl. The Bucks are favored by 6.5, and the total is 213 points. And if you are a new listener, yes, I am aware that Jason Kidd does no longer coach the Bucks. They'll just be high-fiving each other, both these teams, saying, hey, aren't you glad that we both got rid of that dickhead? Giannis is labeled as probable with right knee soreness. He's missed the last two games, while Eric Bledsoe is probable with an ankle injury for the Buckies. At point guard, Bledsoe, 7,600. Love it. Against the Nets, it's always a really good spot to use your point guards. We've seen that time and time again. And then you've got Matty Dellavedova at minimum salary. I don't think we're going to go that far to use him against the Nets. On the Nets side of things, Spencer Dinwiddie, 6,100. Spencer's been playing well. He puts up good numbers, but they're not necessarily these 30-point bonanzas that can make value on through DFS. So I'm not feeling great about Dinwiddie, especially given the Bledsoe defense, which has been quite good against opposition point guards this year. At shooting guard, Brogdon's at 5,800. I like that for cash. I think there's upside for tournaments. I think he's one of the better FanDuel picks of the day. While Caris LeVert at 5,000, I'm off. And Chrissy Middleton at 8,000. Crushing it with Giannis out, but with Giannis likely back, I think that hovers really strongly into fade territory. D'Angelo Russell's at 45. Showed a few signs in the last game, but we're still not ready to jump on board that one just yet. At small forward, the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, 4,600, always for tournaments, and even then, not strongly. While Adetokunbo is at 11,600. He has had a history of annihilating the Nets, so that should always make him a guy that you could use into a tournament lineup. Probably not going to be the greatest cash one, especially with LeBron floating out there at under $11,000, but Giannis could be an interesting tournament pivot. Damari Carroll at 5,700. I don't mind that for cash. He had a poor one in the last game, but I don't mind getting back on board there. But the Bucks' defense across the wing could be a limiting factor. A power forward, Johnny Henson, the Muppet, 5,700. He's continued to listed a power forward despite playing at center all season. Great ease matchup for him. All about the Muppet here. Love this for cash. Love it for tournaments. He averages, and this is back in the days where he didn't play really that much, 37 points in the last three games against the Nets. You know, superb numbers. Hollis Jefferson at 66. I think that's prime fade territory here. And the centers, we don't have really much at all. Thon McCur, Jarrett Allen, Tyler Zeller. If you're going to take a flyer on someone, it's Allen, who had a 30-point a 30 FanDuel point double-double in his last game. But yeah, when the Nets are rolling out four centers every night, it's really, really difficult to rely upon that to be a reliable source of points. And I said reliable twice in that sentence, I'm aware. Over to the next one, or onto DraftKings, sorry. The Muppet is at 4,900. That is really, really strong for DraftKings. And Brogo at 5,500, two of the better plays of the day, I believe, over on DraftKings. Adetokunbo is at 10,400, and he absolutely then is in that LeBron conversation for high price wings that you want to use, and probably on DraftKings is preferred over James. While Bledsoe at 7,500, we've talked about the Nets point guard defense ad nauseum, so he is clearly in a strong spot there. Also, not much else that I'm really loving, though, on the DraftKings side of things. Let's go on to the next one. It's Lakers and Bulls. It's not your Magic Johnson-Michael Jordan battle. It's Jerron Grant versus Tyler Ennis in that backcourt. The Bulls are favored by 3.5, and the total is 220 points. At point guard, we have got Jerron Grant at 6,300. I feel really hesitant about using him. He was shit in the last game. He had a big game in that game against the Pels. Yeah, maybe in a tournament, but definitely not for cash at that price. Ennis, we have no interest in whatsoever. While Alex Caruso could have something, but he is labeled as a shooting guard, but really nothing overly exciting there. Zachy LaVine, 5,400, minutes rising, all about that. That is one of the best plays on FanDuel, and he would be an absolute lock for me in my cash lineups. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at 51, you should never lock into a cash lineup. But he is a tournament guy, especially against the Bulls, who give big numbers up to shooting guards, like huge, huge numbers. And that should really ring those alarm bells for Caldwell Pope for tournaments. Jordy Clarkson also been killing it lately, averaging 48 over the last three, and therefore his salary is at 7,500. Now, Clarkson's minutes could disappear at any point. They could go with weird Caruso, Ennis, Vander Blue, whatever bullshit they want to run out there at point guard. But Clarkson seems to have Luke Walton's trust at the moment, and he could be useful. If it wasn't for the Bulls and their shittiness, I would say at defending guards, I would say it's too expensive for Clarko. But given the way he's playing, given the state of the matchup, it's absolutely in play for tournaments and maybe even a little bit there for cash. Justin Holiday at 56, I think we're probably fading him given how he's sort of dropped off recently with the ascension of Zachy LaVine. Ingram's at 5,800, has struggled, but I like the spot for him. I like the matchup. I'm all about Ingram here, cash and tournaments. While the Denzel the Hammer Valentine at 4,600, that is a strong, strong fade, along with, shout out to Stacey King, David Nwaba, which, actually, I'm giving him credit. He didn't, that's not how he said it. I'm pretty sure he called him Norba. Was it Norba? And that was the Wizards guys that called him Norba. What did Stacey King call him? Someone else. It wasn't Nwaba. I know that much. $4,000 for David Nwaba. We can fade that one. At power forward, Nick Mirotic, $6,200 for him. Just don't like it. Limited upside with the minutes. I know he can produce in that playing time, but that's just a little bit too expensive. While Lauri Markkanen is at $6,600. Much rather take a GPP flyer on him. On the, actually, let's go PunchBob Shiploke, $4,500. Is it likely to be a blowout? No. Are you likely to roster PunchBob? Then the answer to that is also probably no. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, comes in at an extremely sexy price at $5,600. I'm all about that. I'm not a huge Kuzma fan, but at that price, I think you can reach floor pretty comfortably with big upside. So I like that. While Larry Nance at 56, much rather take Kuzma over Nance, despite Nance's defensive abilities. And Julius Randle at 67, also not feeling that as a strong one. Brookie Lopez and Robin Lopez, 42 for Brookie, 43 for Robin. I'm taking Robin every day of the week, and I actually think he can be a really cheap center. Maybe that enables you to get a LeBron and Giannis combination going on the wing, but I think that Robin Lopez, given the matchup, does have a little bit of value here. On DraftKings, Clarko at 73, the same sort of stuff I talked about on FanDuel can be used. While LaVine at 59, while he's not as much of a lock as he is on FanDuel, he is still in a pretty bloody good spot. Markkanen at 66, also a decent GPP option. Randall and Mirotic are too highly priced. Ingram, I'm probably out on there. While the future MVP at 6,300 is definitely not anyone that I am feeling super sexy about. Let's crack it on to the next one. Oh, that didn't look too good, did it, on my graphics? Apologize for that error. the Rockets and the New Orleans Pelicans. The Rockets are favored by 3.5 on the road. The total is a whopping 228.5 points here. Let's take a look at the point guards. And we're talking Chris Paul against his former team. 9,600 has done very well against them in the past, mainly because they haven't had much going defensively against point guards. And they're actually one of the easier teams to go against this year. Also, 9,600 is probably a little bit high for Chris. Maybe a look for a GPP, but with everyone healthy, I think that's more of a stay away spot. Rajon Rondo, it could not get more stay away in my opinion. Jameer Nelson and Ian Clark, I'm not caring about. At shooting guard, Drew Holiday, 7,700 in. Love the floor, love the upside, totally in there. While Eric Gordon, that price just looks at you and go, come on, man, take him, take him, take him. 4,800, we know the drop-off with Harden and Paul playing there is significant, but at that price, he hit six threes and you're almost there already. So I do like it for tournaments, but that's really it. Well, Jimmy Harden's at 11-4. Give me LeBron over him at that high price mark. But Harden at that price, you know, floor is a pretty safe bet. You're getting your 50 at least as a floor, I think is a decent bet with comfortable 65-point upside. So really hard to go past him. The small forwards, yeah, each one more. Darius Miller, strong fades for me for both guys. While Ariza at 53 really rebounded in that last game, and I don't think that he is a horrible option, but I also do think that he is a limited upside and non-stable floor guy, which are the type of players I tend to stay away from. We're also not caring about Tucker or Dante Cunningham. At power forward, Ryan Anderson at 4,200. No. Although, no. I was going to say it's a revenge game, but no. Mamute at 3,600. Let's move on. Boog Cousins, 11,600. Boog has played well against the Rockets before. I don't think you should have really any concerns about getting him. I actually didn't talk Tone Davis. Talk about him in a sec. Boog at 11,700 is fine. Tone at 11,500 is fine. We know they've got strong floors. We know they've got high upsides there. Tournament and cash guys basically every time out, with the exception of if you go up against Utah. The other center, Clint Capela, 7,800. Really dislike this matchup for Clint, so he is on the strong fade list. On DraftKings, Boogie at 10,900, Tone Davis at 10,700 are really, really good plays at that price. I wouldn't go both of them necessarily, but we have seen this year, one of them going off doesn't preclude the other one from going off, so using them as a stack is not a bad decision. Drew at 6,900.
Giggity!
Is awesome. And Jim Harden at 11,400, also pretty strong. While Chrissy Paul, 9,300, he becomes a tournament guy. Now, I passed over Darius Miller on FanDuel, but he comes in at 3,500 on DraftKings. He is going to get every opportunity possible out there playing those Rajon Rondo minutes, and hits a couple of threes and he can get to there. With that 3-point bonus on DraftKings, he is more in play on that site than what he is over on FanDuel. Let's move on to the next game. It's the Clippers. They're taking on the Memphis Grizzlies. This has just got shit show written all over it. We know DeAndre Jordan's back and Juwan Evans is out. But for Memphis, we have got Jermichael Green out, Chandler Parsons out, Jim Ennis the third out, and we've got three questionable blokes, Jarrell Martin, Tyreke Evans, and Benny McLemore. Of course, if Evans is out, then you're opening up your Wayne Seldons. You've got your Mike Henrys there. You've got Mario Chalmers becoming an option, Andy Harrison. If Jarrell Martin is out, you're opening up Ivan Rabin, Deontay Davis. And if McLemore's out, well, that means nothing because he's not a big minute guy anyway. But there are lots of different ways that this can go. None of them would scream cash for me. I like Jarrell Martin if he plays, but if he is out or Tyreke is out, none of that Seldon, Chalmers, Henry, Rab, Davis, Wright combination, which they all could get minutes. None of those guys makes me go, yeah, you know what? I want to deal with them in a cash lineup. As for Andy Harrison at 4,200, tournament maybe. It's a good matchup. It's a positive matchup, but it would need Tyreke out for me to really care. While Milosh at 4,500 is a significant price drop. His numbers have been down. I think he's a fade here. Chalmers at 36. I would be all about that if Tyreke is out, but the last game Tyreke missed, he only played 23 minutes and had 19 points. But that's not far off $3,600 value. In fact, it's above value there. So there is something to be said for using Mario Chalmers if Tyreke is out. At shooting guard, Mike Henry, 3,800. The minutes have been okay for him. The production hasn't been awesome. Of course, just a really weird tournament guy. While Ty Wallace at 44, I've been impressed with him on the court, but not so much with his DFS production. Wayne Seldon Jr. at minimum salary. absolutely I'd be including him in tournaments if Tyreek is out. And if I'm doing multi-entry, he would be in my pool even if we don't hear news on Tyreek, because that could come in, give you a 30-pointer for 3,500, and that's a real big way to go ahead and winning those. Lou Williams at 8,500, a little bit down the last game, but I don't care. I'm in on him, while Tyreek at 7,900, I think that he would be tournament worthy. Wes Johnson at 47, putting up some pretty consistent defensive games, but given the variable nature of steals and blocks and the fact how much they're weighed, and if you have, you know, 3 versus 1, it really does change your score significantly. It's hard to rely upon him as a cash guy, while Dylan Brooks at 43 has very limited appeal. Jarrell Martin at 46, I like it for cash if he plays, but we don't know that yet, of course. While Blakey Griffin at 8,700, I don't think the upside's really massive for Blake here, but I do think that he has got a really strong floor, which is exactly what you want as a cash play. The table, Montrezl Harrell's value has disappeared now that DeAndre is back. Speaking of DeAndre, 8,000 for him. Don't love it against Marc Gasol. That's a fade. And I'd almost say the same thing for Gasol at 7,700. I think there are much better center options out there rather than those two blokes. On DraftKings, I love Lou Williams at 8,000. I think that's really, really good. Wes Johnson at 45 for a tournament is worth a look. And then, of course, we're looking at guys like Jarrell Martin if he is ready to go. Or you could take a flyer on a Wayne Seldon at 3,900 or Mario Chalmers at 39 if Tyreek happens to be sidelined, which, of course, we don't know. And the Grizzlies often or nearly always won't update before the contests lock. The Philadelphia 76ers and the San Antonio Spurs. TJ McConnell is likely back for this one, as is LaMarcus Aldridge, who missed the last game. Trevor Booker has a dislocated finger. Jared Bayless with his wrist problem. And Markel Fultz with whatever the hell is going on with him. I think it's highly unlikely that Fultz plays here. If Bayless is out as well, you're going to have Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrot get another start and some more minutes for Justin Anderson. And if Trevor Booker is out, I'd expect Rashawn Holmes to pick up those minutes and become maybe a GPP type of a guy. At point guard, DeJounte Murray, 5,800 for DeJounte. This is like an average matchup for him. We saw him be okay in the last game, nothing like the Cavs performance. But at a $5,800 price tag, the upside and the appeal is taken away from DeJounte here, I believe. Tone Parker's at 42, and I don't care for that. Bayless, Fultz, no, don't care either. Pat Mills at 3,900, always worth a GPP look. Played quite well against the Sixers last time out, but I don't feel super confident there. Well, Timothy John McConnell at 4,800. If he does return, it's a nice sexy price drop. If Bayless is out, I would be looking at McConnell here, but anyone going up against the Spurs is a real shit show majority of the time. Dan Green's at 48. Big game in the last one for Dan. Manu has been ruled out, so that does give him a little bit of a safer floor, but I'm still not interested. While Forbesy or Luwawu-Cabarrot at 4,200. I'd look at Timotei maybe at 4,200, but his high score of the year is 23, and that was in one of those last two games, and that's not really moving the needle for me at 4,200, so probably not. At small forward, Kyle Anderson's at 63. I think that's probably just a little bit too high for cash, and I don't really love his upside, so probably fade. While Bob Cove's at 6,300. I found this old thread from Covington on Twitter. He was asking people what do you guys think my best nickname is? And honestly, some of the suggestions were just horrendous, just poor. And I'm not saying you had to call him Bob Cove. Lord Covington's fine. We know that, but I think Bobby Buckets. No, that is just a terrible, terrible nickname, and it should just die in a fire and never ever return. Anyone called Buckets it's just a bad, bad nickname. There's already too many Buckets in the NBA. The exact amount of Buckets there should be in the NBA is zero, and there's already too many of them. So don't throw out this Bobby Buckets bullshit. Power forward, LaMarcus, 9,400 for Aldridge. No Kawhi, okay matchup. I think it's not bad, but probably still a little bit too high. While Dario Saric at 6,400, I love his floor for cash. I feel okay about that. While Benny Simmons at 85. With McConnell back, he might not have that 60-point extravaganza he had the last time out. And the Spurs is a bit of a concern, but he dropped 46 in the first game in Philadelphia against the Spurs. So there is some history of him playing well there, but I definitely am not relying upon it for cash. Davis Bertans, with Aldridge and Gasol both playing, unlikely for him to repeat his performances from the last two games. At center, Joel Embiid, $10,000, played well last time against the Spurs, 52 points in that one. That's a $1,000 price dip. The Spurs, again, really limit pretty much every position you go up against, but Embiid, like Simmons, should be a guy that's in the mix in your tournament pools. Well, Powell at 6,400 is crushing it. He's averaging 34 points in 30 minutes over his last five, and the 30 minutes is probably the most astonishing part of that. Really playing well, but in this one against Embiid with Aldridge there next to him, I think it's probably going to be fade territory for Pau Gasol. Over on DraftKings, not much I love from this game at all. In fact, I don't think any of these guys have any lockability in cash. And you can put Simmons and Embiid in your tournaments. Aldridge would be the closest guy to a cash guy. Even Šarić at 6,500 is probably a little bit too expensive. While Kyle Anderson at 56, maybe I could say that's a cash option at 5,600 for Kyle. 54 for DeJounte Murray. Again, more leaning towards tournaments there with DeJounte. The next game is the Trailblazers. They're taking on the Dallas Mavericks. Let's have a look at the point guards. Dennis Smith Jr., 6,500. A disappointing performance from Smitty in the last one. He had 43 the last time against Portland. I'm ready to get back on that bandwagon, but I'm also ready to get back on his opponent. Damian Lillard, 9,400. This feels like a 40-point floor scenario with 60-point upside. Love point guards against Dallas, and Lillard is one of the best. Shabazz Napier, Yogi Ferrell not really doing too much for me, nor is JJ Barea at 4,700 definitely too highly priced. At shooting guard, Christian James McCollum at 7,200, really putting up some consistent lines. The Wes Matthews defense is a problem, and that would lead me to fade him in a lot of situations, but I could still see using him just given the hot streak he's on, but consider that Matthews defense as a warning. As for Wesley, he had 48 in the last game. He's at 5,600, and I absolutely don't mind using him. He's been relatively consistent lately with a decent floor. The minutes are fine. I don't think it's a horrendous option to even use him in cash to get some other high-priced guys in. The pencil at 6,700 is not working for me, nor is Evan Turner. Dwight Powell at power forward is a GPP guy, but that is literally it. And even then, it's not a high priority one. Don't care about Dirk. Ed Davis had a big game with Nurkic in foul trouble and elbow trouble, so hard to really rely upon that maybe as a tournament flyer. While the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He's at 5,200. Big game in the last one, so we're probably looking at the shit side of that for Al-Farouq in this one, and a negative matchup. Fade away. Yusuf Nurkic, 6,600. He dropped a whopping 8.6 in the last matchup. His last three games against Dallas have given you 12.4 points, but in fairness, a lot of that was with Denver. Absolutely no way that I want to deal with him in cash, but I do think that there is low ownership tournament upside here for Big Nurk. On DraftKings, Lillard at 91 I like, McCollum at 68 I like, and Smith at 61, all good value plays there, and not much else really differing too far from the FanDuel. Although I think for Eddie Davis at 34, you could really sneak him into a cash just if you're looking for some salary relief in the big man positions. Let's go on to the last game of the day. The Knicks and the Suns. Timmy Hardaway will return for this game. We don't know the status of Kylo Quinn, who missed this one. Marquise Chris is probable for Phoenix. Alex Len is questionable with the ankle soreness, and TJ Warren is also questionable. So we could have some Greg Monroe action. Jay Triano also said there's going to be a change to the starting lineup. Does that mean that Monroe starts again? Does that mean that, fingers crossed, Devin Booker starts at point guard and we get more Troy Daniels or Josh Jackson in that starting lineup? That's what I'd be doing if I was Triano, but I'm not, so I don't know what's going to happen. But there is a lot of uncertainty with what will happen with this change, in addition to the questions over Alex Len and TJ Warren. At point guard, Jarrett Jackson at 4,900. Had been pretty consistent up until today's game. Really, really strong matchup for Jack. I still think that he is a fine cash play in a really good matchup. As for Trey Burke, you could throw him into a tournament, minimum salary. I think his ownership is going to be through the roof, but I absolutely don't think it's a bad play. But again, remember, today's game, no Tim Hardaway, and that enabled him to play way more two-point guard lineups, and I think a 37-point performance in 29 minutes is the absolute pinnacle of what Burke is going to produce this year. Devin Booker at 8,000, I'm aboard that. I think this is a 40-pointer here for Devin, so I'm totally interested in him there. Courtney Lee at 51 is cash without much tournament upside, while Timmy Hardaway at 6,400, a bit of a price rise, but given how good the matchup is, given the fact that he rested today, I do think that that's a worthy spending of that money. I didn't talk about point guards before, Cannon, Ulis, and Nilakina, because they shouldn't be used. At small forward, Tony Warren Jr., $7,000. Probably with the knee issue, that's not something I'm really interested in. While Beasley at $6,400, too expensive given the Hardaway return. And Joshie Jackson at 42. If you want to do multiple tournament lineups and we haven't heard about Phoenix, although normally we hear in advance, but if you haven't, maybe throw Joshie into your tournament at 4,200 because there's 30-point upside there, probably even higher if he does get 30. A power forward, Marquise Chris at 5,700. I think that's a tournament play also, while Dragan Bender at 36, zero interest. And our mate, Kristaps
Porzingis.
He is at 8,700. He plays very well against Phoenix. It is a great matchup for him. I am aboard using Kristaps here. Enes Kanter at 6,200. I actually don't think that he is a horrible play. Probably wouldn't be the guy that I'd use with 10 games on, but not horrid. And of course, Alex Len, we don't know. I don't think he's worth anything, but Greg Munro is the interesting one. Again, if we don't hear news on these guys, throwing Munro into a tournament lineup could work out.
As Greg runs in, we realize this could get dangerous.
On DraftKings, I like Chris for tournaments at 5,000. I like that quite a lot. Booker at 84, probably a bit too high, while Porzingis at 83, I think is quite strong. But there's not as much value in this game on DraftKings as what there is on FanDuel. Let's have a look at Yahoo now for tournaments. We've got Boog Cousins, we've got Jordy Clarkson, Valanciunas, the Baptist John Collins, Al-Farouq Aminu, Jarrett Jack, Tristan Thompson, Bojan Bogdanovic, Dwight Powell, Ed Davis, Joshie Jackson, Fred Van Vliet, Tone Parker, and Jarrett Allen. And for cash, we've got Isaiah Cannon, Dan Green, Marvin Williams, Ty Wallace, the Blue Swimmer, Yogi Ferrell, Wes Matthews, DeJounte Murray, Larry Nance, Wesley Johnson, Pau Gasol, Vic Oladipo, Dwight Howard, and Dame Lillard. On Moneyball for tournaments, I'm looking at Jordy Clarkson, Dennis Smith Jr., Valanciunas, Chris, Jarrell Martin, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Tristan Thompson, Andy Harrison, Eddie Davis, Wayne Seldon Jr. For cash, I'm looking at Robin Lopez, Yogi Ferrell, Courtney Lee, DeJounte Murray, Kyle Kuzma, Wes Johnson, Zach LaVine, Brandon Ingram, Johnny Henson, Timmy Hardaway Jr., CJ McCollum, Lou Williams, Dwight, Lillard, and LeBron. And on Draft Stars for tournaments, we've got Boog, Porzingis, Clarko, Jarrell Martin, Tristan Thompson, Joshie Jackson, and Wayne Seldon, Ivan Rabb. And for cash, we've got Mario Chalmers, Andy Harrison, Wesley Johnson, Marquise Chris, Johnny Henson, the Muppet, Yusuf Nurkic, Dennis Smith, Lowry Markkanen, Eric Bledsoe, DeAndre Jordan, Don Mitchell, Dwight Howard, and Tone Davis. Don't forget, if you do listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, please go and leave a 5-star review. It's a great way of supporting the podcast. I am Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. Find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble, and find this podcast on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and on Spotify, and on YouTube, where you can go leave that big thumbs up, subscribe, and leave a comment below. Good luck for Friday. Good luck for DFS. Good luck for the weekend. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Mario Hezonja.